This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Thanks for listening to the Hit That Line podcast network. You can now download our new app in the iTunes or Google Play Store. Listen anytime and anywhere on your favorite mobile device. Just search Hit That Line now. This is the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast.
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Stop by 9390 Rogers Avenue for the best liquor, beer, and wine deals in the River Valley.
Arkansas wins the national championship!
Check out Eastside Liquor on Facebook for weekly specials.
Say goodbye! Darren McFadden, 80 yards, touchdown!
Do you want to watch the Morning Rush, Halftime, Even, Ruskin, and Zach? Find our live video stream on Facebook, YouTube, X, Instagram, and Twitch. ESPN Arkansas, more than just radio.
Good morning, Chuck. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Gentlemen, how are you guys today?
We're good. We're good.
Good.
NBA, a lot of people have said that the NBA playoffs were boring and that the finals were boring. I think sometimes the word boring also goes along with the term dominance, with a team that completely dominates a postseason, because there's just not that much drama. And there really wasn't any drama involving the Celtics in the postseason, nor in the regular season too. So which direction would you go there? Would you say this was just about dominance rather than boredom?
Well, maybe both, to be honest. When you don't have a rooting interest in either of the teams, you know, you're not rooting for dominance. So if you don't get that, or if you do get that, you know, you might think it was boring. If you're a Celtics fan, obviously you don't. It was a great season. The thing that I think that hurt the finals, frankly, was the long layoff between the conference finals and the overall finals. And then you had a one-sided series to boot. So all the drama in the NBA playoffs ended about 3 weeks ago, and there's really not been any drama since.
Did you see your boy Julius Randle up there on the mic yesterday?
You know, I did not. I actually, I've been watching college baseball. I've been watching the tournament and the World Series and all that, and that's what I was watching last night.
So they've had some of these players out there and they're talking with them, and you can kind of tell a little bit by their body language and what they say. Julius Randle's a class act, man. I would want him a part of my team. The way he was describing the game, the way he's talking about, what do you say at halftime? It's like, oh, absolutely. Do you think that's a guy? You think Paul George is a guy that'll be a New York Knick next year?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He's. I actually don't think that the Knicks need to mess with a lot. I'm not sure that Paul George, quite honestly, would be the right mix. You know, Carmelo Anthony was a great player, but I don't know that you're going to win a championship. I mean, Tom Thibodeau's the real deal. So, I mean, I'm not sure in that regard. It sounds like Randle, I would think Randle would come back. They would bring you back. Pardon me.
Well, no, and I Chuck, the only reason I ask is because, you know, you just see what you're going to have to get through. You're going to have to get through the Boston Celtics.
No, you're right.
101 games, and this stat blows my mind. I told it to Phil. I told it to 101 games they played in this year. In 50 of them, they had at least a 20-point lead, and it's just
that's
wild.
Amazing. Yeah. Wow. That is an incredible stat. I hadn't heard that. Yeah, that's a they were a juggernaut. You know, they got a little bored, I thought, at the end of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes at the end of a long regular season, great teams will do that. And then they recharge and refocus, and You know, every time someone would say about a team in the East, and I thought this about the Knicks for a little bit, thought about it a little bit for the Pacers too, that you know they might be able to give them a run for their money. But in reality, the Celtics were the best team all year long, and they're the favorite to repeat. I mean, I saw this morning where they're the overwhelming favorite to repeat, and I don't know how you could argue with that.
I think they got bored in game four. The result of that game, I think, might speak to that a little bit, considering how good that they've played all year long. Maybe they did take one game off. And you got a champion now. Is this 3 years in a row that there has been an NBA champion that has come from Arkansas? You know, Jordan Walsh, I don't know if he had the last seat on the bench, but he was pretty close to it. Got in one game in the finals. And, well, I mean, he gets a ring. He is an NBA champion. I think that's 3 years in a row.
Well, we see what we see watching the games. And, you know, when you're part of a team like that, you know, you're going through it every day. So he may have occupied the last spot on the bench, but I'm sure that on a day-to-day basis, he was very much a part of that group. And so happy for him. And, I mean, what a way to start your career.
No kidding. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, I was just gonna kind of switch it over to the U.S. Open and see if you saw that U.S. Open
and
just how epic that. I mean, it really was. I mean, Rory shoots 69, DeChambeau shoots 71. Rory had made 396 straight putts inside of 3 feet until that one. It was just. I mean, it's and the U.S. Open to do it to you. I thought it was a great battle, and I was just kind of like what you were talking about earlier and how Phil does with the baseball. I was rooting for a playoff. I wanted to see him to keep playing.
Well, I thought that's what we were going to have. First, I thought Rory was going to win it outright, and then he missed the putt. I don't think television does justice to the terrain of the greens in these tournaments. The key in DeChambeau's bunker shot was he kept it below the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And Rory's putt, even though it was a very short putt, was like right off the top of a hill and moving. And those are the hardest putts to make. So I just felt for Rory. I like Rory. I'm a Rory fan, and I'm not going to lie, I was pulling for him. But, you know, this is – I can't imagine a more crushing defeat, and the accounts that I read kind of indicate that this might have been the toughest one of all. But, you know, I was reading one of these golf data analysts that, you know, crunches all the numbers. The odds of hitting a 55-foot bunker shot to within 4 feet, his was like 3 feet 11 inches, the odds of hitting it within 4 feet are minus 1.7. I didn't even know there was such a thing as minus 1.7 in odds. But in other words, it was highly unlikely. And that was probably as clutch a shot as we've seen in a major championship in a long time.
They're telling you that there's a negative chance of that happening.
Yeah.
It's not even a 0.001.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works.
it's not one of those, so you're telling me there's a chance. I mean, I'm telling you there's not a chance. And he still did it.
That's why. So, I mean, this goes down in history as one of the great shots if it happens at a major on the last hole, I mean, this is
one of the best shots ever.
Of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the all-time clutch shots. When you consider where he was off the tee and, you know, then obviously where he was in the bunker on his second shot, I don't think anybody thought DeChambeau was going to say par. I mean, everybody thought there was going to be a playoff. I did. I haven't talked to anyone who watched it closely, who thought after that tee shot, yeah, he's gonna scramble and make par. But he did, and that's why he's the champion.
I saw he's not even going to be able to play in the Olympics either because the LIV Tour, which he plays on mostly, those points don't qualify for the World Golf Rankings, which is what they go by to decide who's on each well, I mean, those who subscribe to it, the U.S. Olympic golf team. So, I mean, it seemed to me there'd be a guy who'd want to get out there. But has there been – now, you know, I don't watch golf on a consistent basis. I've not kind of lived through it. But I do know that there's been a change in Bryson in the way that he's kind of presented himself publicly or through the media. And it's I know that there, he's been one of those golfers that's kind of been, I don't know if I'd say a lightning rod, but you either felt one way about him or the other. And it really feels like this one, this championship, has gotten him in a lot of people's good graces. Also, because of the way that he took the championship in stride. I mean, he allowed everybody that he walked around afterwards to touch the trophy, and you know, going on Golf Channel afterwards to work with the guy about the shot that he had just hit and coaching him through it. It just seems this is more than just a major championship. It's somebody that's kind of become more likable, I think, in people's eyes just over the last year or so.
I think sometimes we forget how young these guys are.
Yeah.
And that they mature, even though they may be athletic stars, they mature just like everybody else does. Sometimes, honestly, at a slower rate. But in DeChambeau's case, I think this is just a matter of a young man becoming more comfortable in his surroundings. You know, he has been a lightning rod. And there were times that, you know, he came across as a spoiled brat. Now, I'm still not, you know, I'm still not down with his live stuff. I'm not going to lie about that. But I do think that he has done a very good job of changing the way people view him. But I think he's doing that in large part because he's growing up, he's more mature, and he's enjoying the moment.
Yeah, and the whole tribute to Payne Stewart I thought was pretty cool. I wonder, Chuck, that to me, this course, and we had Clay on last Wednesday and he was talking about it, the rough was not penal at all out there, man. He was just bombing it and it's kind of landing in the sand, but it's always sitting up, you know, and you got to say you kind of get lucky, but it kind of, I get the greens or the, you know, the defense of that track, but for me, a U.S. Open, you hit it in the, you miss a fairway, it should be penal. You can't just keep he hit seven fairways, something. You can't just keep missing fairways and getting birdies. That's not, to me, that's not a U.S. Open.
Well, there weren't a lot of birdies now. I mean, when the winning score is 6 under or 5 under, whatever it was, the trade-off there is the greens. If you'd put thick rough with those greens, I don't know that anybody would have shot 10 over, truthfully. The part in the missing the fairway there was if you got in that wire grass, if you got in a clump, mm-hmm. if you got in the wrong spot, it was deadly. But you're right. The defense, the course's defense is the greens. And, you know, there were just so many times when a foot or two was the difference between staying on the green and, you know, being 10 yards off the green. It was just amazing to watch. It was just a different type U.S. Open. The greens were more punishing, and the rough was maybe a little less punishing. But it was still hard to make birdie. I mean, there were a lot of one putts for pars out there.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. From baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Hickey and Hull Law Partners are now here for you and all your legal needs in MENA and the Little Rock area. Hickey and Hull Law Partners specializing in divorce, custody case, civil litigations, and more. Having over 7 decades of combined experience to better serve you and the community you live in. Please visit kevinhickeylaw.com or call us at 479-434-2414 for a consultation or come by an office nearest you. Things are about to get better.
Chuck, you had said a moment ago you've been watching a lot of College World Series. Some people have said that the NBA Finals and the NBA playoffs were boring. The College World Series has been anything but. Almost every single game has been riveting. Most of them have been one-run ball games, too. Walk-offs, it's been outstanding, and it's kind of played exactly the way that I thought it would play, with Tennessee and A&M waiting both 2-0, and right now they're playing the best. I think A&M might be a little bit banged up, but it's going to be an SEC team again, I'll tell you that.
Sure seems like it. Sure seems like it. I thought A&M was impressive last night and the way they beat Kentucky. And you know, Tennessee's just playing like a team right now that thinks they can win every game. And that's kind of the mentality that I see with their team. And they won a big ball game over Florida State, and sometimes winning that first game is the hardest game to win, and when you win it like they did, you can ride it for a while. And I kind of think that's where they are. But A&M's really playing well right now, too. They're pitching really well right now. And it sort of looks like it'll be those two. Although I will say, I don't think there's a team on Tennessee's side of the bracket that can beat them twice. I do think Kentucky could beat A&M twice. I don't think it's likely, but I think they could.
I think they could, too. They got to stay away from the big inning. And truthfully, they probably have to hope that Jace Laviolette is not able to play with this hamstring that he's got going on. Look, people talk about Tennessee a lot because they were SEC regular season champions. I think the personality of Tony Vitello also draws a lot of eyes, and just the fact that they have been a fairly dominant program now for the last 4 years. But A&M has like 4 first-team All-Americans, and they have potentially the best reliever in college baseball in Evan Auchincloss. The thing is, though, and you know, these are 3 teams that have not won a College World Series championship. I think one of those 3 is going to do it, and it's just as if it's a team out of the West, which A&M is, you know, it just the direction you go with this here. You got Arkansas that wins the division, but you end up maybe with a West Division team again that wins the College World Series, and then we're all left rolling our eyes.
Well, we should be used to it because that's kind of the way it works in our league, and that's just, I think that's something that is because of baseball. I mean, just that's something that maybe is a little more unique to that sport than what you would find in, you know, basketball or football or some of the others. It's a, you know, we see it at all levels of baseball that if you can get in that postseason tournament, you've got a shot. And I think that when you look at the teams that are in Omaha, the vast majority of them, nobody's surprised that they're there. But once they all got there, it was very difficult to determine, you know, which name you're going to pull out of a hat. But I do think the 3 that seem the most obvious right now are the ones that probably most people were picking when it started.
You were calling games when Tony was an assistant at Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
That was a couple of years at least, right?
Yeah.
He has gotten himself built a monster there. You know, and there's all these rumors about Texas trying to wait for the season to end. I don't mean their season, I mean the actual championship to be raised, and then they get rid of David Pierce and then make a run at Tony Vitello. I just wonder, I mean, you try to get into somebody's head here, and there are some places where you think, yes, that's where I want to go, because this is the cream of the crop. This is the Yankees of college baseball or the Celtics of college baseball. Texas is that. But what about the idea of maybe trying to build a program in your own image and likeness in a place they haven't done that before? And I just, you know, kind of like Dave has done at Arkansas. He took what Norm did and I think made it his own. Tony, Tennessee had a decent program 20 years before Tony got there, and then he's turned it into his own thing, which is, I think it's a monster. It feels like he might, I know it's still early in his career, but it feels like right now it might be the start of something even bigger than what he's done at Tennessee for the last 3-4 years.
I'd be surprised if he goes to Texas. I would be surprised by that. I think the romance of that job is past. I think Tennessee right now, I mean, ask any high school kid in America, including the ones in Texas, or at least a lot of them. Hey, who'd you rather play for? Tony Vitello or David Pierce? Or where would you rather go, Tennessee or Austin? Unless you've grown up pulling for the Longhorns, I think the answer is Knoxville. I would be surprised if he goes. I think Tony's done a great job there. I'll give you an example. I thought Tony won the game for him Friday night in that win over Florida State. He'd been riding those umps unmercifully the whole game. We saw when that check swing was ruled a no swing at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's why coaches ride referees and umpires all night, is to get that call. You know, they were in the third base dugout. I would bet you a dollar that if Tennessee was in the first base dugout, that'd have been a strike and the game would have been over. Vitello had been on that umpire all night long, and in the most critical moment, he puckered and he choked. And that's why a coach rides those guys from start to finish. He'd just been out and jumped that guy over that balk call. I was surprised he wasn't thrown out of the game, frankly, when he did that. I thought he worked those umpires for one moment. I'm not saying that, you know, the objective is always to, you know, there's going to be a call late in the game and I'm going to get it. But I think that what we saw on that call was a byproduct of all the heat that he'd gotten from the Tennessee dugout all night. Because, look, I'm glad Tennessee's 2-0, but that was a strike. The game should have been over.
Absolutely.
And to use a basketball term, he just swallowed his whistle.
Well, and so this hits on a theme that we, I think, focus on sometimes about you got to be lucky to be good, but then you've also got to take advantage of those moments that you feel that you're lucky. Tennessee was lucky in that moment. I think they were also lucky that there was a center fielder for Florida State that probably could have made a catch or two that he didn't make in that ninth inning. It's the same idea as Bryson DeChambeau. He got lucky. Rory misses a putt. He takes advantage of it. You know, you've got to take advantage of those moments when something didn't go someone else's way or you just get lucky, which is what that was with Tennessee. I think you're right. Tony did have something to do with that, but there's also some luck involved in it too. That's not a team, though, that I ever thought needed to be lucky. It's like, come on, any other team than that to get
I'll
lucky.
I'll agree
but they
with
got
you
it.
On that part. They don't need any more help.
That's for certain. That is for absolute certain. Hey, we got a text in here from, who was it? Wes and Harrison. He wanted to know your thoughts on Trevin Brazile coming back to Arkansas. Do you think he will start, or do you think he might be a sixth man off the bench?
That's hard to say. I was a little surprised, honestly, that that the announcement came that he was going to be a Razorback last or next year. Only because sometimes coaches come in and they want to start fresh. I wouldn't venture to bet whether he'd start or how he'd fall in this rotation. It's going to be a small rotation, it certainly seems like. And by small, I mean, you know, 8 or 9 max. So he's going to get playing time, but whether or not he starts, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure he'll be an integral part of what they do.
If he's healthy, Chuck, and he'll figure out defense, he'll figure out the kind of the spacing, and 100% he starts. I think he's just as talented
as anybody. He certainly could.
Yeah, I think it's upstairs with – it's just kind of maturity thing is what I'm saying, Chuck. He got to stay healthy, but if he matures a little bit and becomes a student of the game, man, he can – I think he's a first-rounder if he'll just do it.
He's got the right attitude. There's never been a single moment, I don't think, where anyone has ever questioned Trevin Brazil's attitude, whether it was while he was healthy or while he wasn't. And Matt, you know this. You find out a lot about a guy when he's hurt, in terms of, you know, where his want-to level is. And I think they were just ecstatic over the way Trevin rehabbed when he first injured that knee. And it speaks to his competitiveness that he probably, well, not probably, certainly played a good bit last year when he wasn't at 100%. So I'm anxious, number one, to see him play with full health. Because we've really not seen much of that. And obviously a new staff and superior competition in practice every day. You've got to think that all that's going to make him a better player. But staying healthy is the first thing.
But I think you're right. The way he goes about it, the way he went about it the last couple years, the there's still some people up there that are Arkansas people that are around there. Don't think Coach Cal didn't ask about that and figure out some of that stuff before he.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure he did. And that's part of getting to know any new jobs, getting to know the people, finding out what makes them tick, and ultimately, you know, deciding can this guy help us.
Are you ready to give your family the best 4th of July experience yet? USA Fireworks wants to make that happen. Go to hitthatline.com/USA Fireworks and enter for your chance to win a $1,000 fireworks show. It's $1,000 wholesale fireworks worth more than $2,000 retail. Again, hitthatline.com/USA Fireworks. The USA Fireworks banging giveaway, courtesy of USA Fireworks, ESPN Arkansas, and hitthatline.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift. Selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
What is it, about 50 minutes until first pitch? 49 minutes right now until first pitch? You think
Who's counting? Is the season
going to extend today? What do you think?
You know, I have a good feeling about today. Look, here's the deal. I think Florida State has an offense that is capable of winning. I always just get nervous with the pitching staff, and that's what happened on Friday, and everyone blowing on my phone. And I was like, well, if you've watched this team all year, I've seen this happen multiple times. The bullpen is just not very strong. And against an offense like Tennessee, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to pay for those mistakes. But if they can get a good outing from Andrew Armstrong to start it off so they don't have to go to the bullpen early, I'm feeling good.
Jared's done an amazing job at this team. And I've all, you know, I'd forgotten about the idea that he executed one of the greatest upsets in super regional history with the win over Tennessee when he was the Notre Dame head coach, and now he's completely resurrected Florida State from missing the ACC tournament. Never mind, I mean, I forget how many years they've made the regionals, but then they miss out on the ACC tournament and then get to Omaha. So I mean, regardless of what happens today or in the near future, it's a great year for the Seminoles.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, I mean, I think it was a 43-year consecutive snap, unfortunately, last season when they did make the ACC tournament, and they started off hot. I remember last year after watching Arkansas play TCU in Arlington, FSU went to TCU and took two of three from them, and I was like, okay, this team is pretty good. And then the wheels just kind of fell off, and they were in games, they just didn't know how to finish games. It's the complete opposite this year, and it's been really fun to watch because I think that college baseball is better when FSU is good. And I'm a little biased, but I just think overall for the game, to see the Noles back in Omaha. And I'm excited because I also think that Link Jarrett, if you've listened to his press conferences, has his own personal mission of winning a title for Mike Martin that he couldn't win for him when he was alive. And I think that FSU's got a really good chance to finally break through and win a national title in college baseball at some point, whether it be this year or in the coming years, with Link Jarrett leading this team. So it's exciting.
I was texting Alyssa during the Super Regional. I left you alone during the game, the early game that you played against Tennessee.
You were one of, you're one of the only people, and I appreciate you for that.
I figured you were going to get blown up there, but I imagine you had to have the same reaction on the check swing. Charlie wanted me to ask you. I'm sitting there with my mom and my daughter. We're watching the game, and all of them. It's like, my daughter doesn't realize that she knows in her own mind what a check swing should look like and what it shouldn't look like from all the years watching, because she said, that looked like a swing, Dad. I said, you and everybody else except the umpire and the other team wearing orange thought that.
Yep, and it was not a check swing. So that would have been strike three. That should have been the game, and things would be different in Omaha. But I've also come to terms with, you know, Tennessee overthrew first base a lot in that game. And there was that one inning where Jackson West should have scored, but yet he went back because he missed third base. And then there was the relay home, which the Tennessee guy was out by about 3 feet, and the ball just hit his knee and, like, ricocheted off. Like, so many other things could have changed the trajectory of that game. And, yes, that one specifically dictated the outcome, because if that didn't happen, they win the ball game. But this game affects me enough. I slept like crap on Friday night, just subconsciously, so emotionally, just like, what happened? So I was like, I can't let this game affect me anymore. I just got to let it go and move on. But it was really, really tough. It's still tough because they keep bringing it up. Of course they do. So,
well, they're going to bring it up. They're definitely going to bring it up.
There's already been at least two Arkansas, Oregon State balls in the drop balls references already, and that was back in 2018. So of course they're going to bring it up.
I can't.
They bring everything up,
Alyssa. I can't think of the 2024 Olympics and not think of you and how cool that is. You get to go over there. I was watching some of the Olympic trials of the swimming, and I thought that was pretty cool. They had a girl that was. She had, or I guess a lady in like 2000, she tried out for the Olympics and made it. And then she was 40 years old and was at this Olympic trials, which was pretty cool. I didn't know if you'd been watching any of the swimming that's been going on. And I know the, June 24th is when the track events get going. Are you going out there? Will you be, how many Arkansas people are going out there?
A ton, not just current Razorbacks, but former Razorbacks. And then, people who train here in Fayetteville. You know, there are a lot of athletes who train here in Fayetteville that did not go to Arkansas because of the coaching staff and the facilities here. So there's going to be a lot of ties to Fayetteville over there in Eugene. I'm not going because I was going to go, but then I didn't know what was going to happen with baseball season in Omaha. And so I ended up not going. We've got a station in Portland who's going to do some coverage of it for us. But the swimming's been really, really fun. And Finn loves it. Finn loves watching the swimming. He came home from VBS last night and was like, Mom, I want to watch the swimming. And I was like, okay. You know, so we turned the swimming on. And it's been fun because it's so exciting. Quick, short races. And you learn a lot. You learn a lot about these new up-and-coming swimmers. And, of course, you know, the legends like Katie Ledecky and all of those who are looking to try to qualify for the Olympics again. And I've enjoyed it. I'm excited about track. I'm excited about gymnastics. And, you know, I was even looking at the golf. They announced the golf today for the men. And so, you know, Maria Fossey and Gabby Lopez going to play for their home country of Mexico as former Razorbacks too. So there's a lot of Razorbacks representing a lot of sports for other countries that you got to keep an eye on too. By the way, Matt, congratulations on your Hall of Honor nod. I got that email today.
Yeah, thanks, Alyssa.
Yeah.
It's as well-deserved as anything, I think.
Yes. I, to be quite honest, I was like, about time.
Absolutely. So I wanted to hit on the Olympics again here for some other stuff. Sometimes we in the conversation about the change in college sports, it's all focused on football and basketball. Some schools throwing baseball in there. And then the other aspect of the conversation is what happens to the Olympic sports? The going theory is there are going to be some sports that are dropped. And this, you know, the American college sports system, just think of the countries that you had mentioned of athletes that are just at Arkansas and from where they're from and how they're representing their countries on the international stage. And they wouldn't be able to do that potentially without coming over here and getting some of the best coaching in the world and playing in at Arkansas and in the SEC. It definitely feels like, you know, that is an aspect that could affect international sports in a way that I don't know if people are thinking about too much, because we're focused on the money in football and the amount of teams that make the playoff and whether the NCAA tournament's going to change and all of that. But really, the reverberations, if you lose any amount of Olympic sports from some of these big athletics departments, I mean, the reverberations are felt much more internationally, I think, than we even think about.
Absolutely, and I think, too, and it's about having the money to bring the athletes, regardless of where they live, where they come from, and bringing them over here to play on the collegiate level. And you look at the men's golf team and the women's golf team at Arkansas, so many international players on those teams, tennis, for example, swimming, too. Anna Hopkin is going to be swimming for Great Britain, again, for her second Olympics. She won gold 4 years ago, or really 3 years ago. But you're absolutely right, and I love that you bring that up, because it was a topic of conversation at the U.S. Summit about how important collegiate athletics are for the Olympic sports and for the USOPC to have a big push on making sure that those Olympic sports remain at the college level with everything else that's going on. And I talked to Neil Harper, the head coach for Arkansas Swimming, today and asked him, and he goes, just look. When you're watching the Olympic trials, look at how many people are wearing caps with an SEC logo on it. Even Katie Ledecky is swimming with her Gators cap on, right? It is. If you're swimming in the Olympic trials and swimming against the best in the world, well, guess what? You probably swam against them at the NCAAs, and you probably swam against them at the SEC championships. And that's how important collegiate athletics are for these Olympic sports. We did a story a few weeks ago in the company about three shooters from Ohio State who are on their shooting team who are going to be on the Olympic team. You think about hockey, field hockey. There are girls, because field hockey is so big in the Northeast, who Maryland, Penn, Syracuse, all of this. But, you know, that's an Olympic sport. And those girls played collegiately so they could be ready to play on the Olympic level. And those are things that get lost. But it's almost like, you know, if there were a minor leagues of Olympics, right? Yep. Gymnastics is different because most gymnasts actually go to the Olympics before they go to college. Now, you know, some of them weren't even going because they competed before they were even eligible to go to college. So it's one of those things that they have to keep in mind, and I'd be interested to see if we ever see the big three, right, football, basketball, baseball, break away and do their own thing on the collegiate level, and the NCAA just runs your Olympic-esque kind of sport. And if that changes, if it makes it more balanced and fair, but it's going to be really interesting and kind of scary, I think. I think we're safe to say it could be scary for some of these sports where, you know, you're not competing unless you played this sport in the collegiate level. You know, where can you go? Taekwondo, CJ Nicholas, going to do a story on him soon. He's a Taekwondo artist who is going to be on the Olympic team for the United States, but he was able to compete in college. You know, you can't forget about those guys either.
All right, last thing before you leave. Are the Dodgers going to be all right without Mookie Betts? Like, he is the most important player on that team. He's out for at least, I think it's 7 to 8 weeks with the broken hand. I mean, a guy that was signed as a right fielder, and now he's nearly a Gold Glove shortstop. And they got a great team, but, I mean, that's their dude.
Yep. Here's the deal. Absolutely, yes. I think they're going to be fine because they figure out ways, but Mookie Betts is a really, really, really tough guy to lose. I feel like their shortstop position is just cursed, right? Like, you play in the middle infield and you're just cursed as a Dodger. Look at Gavin Lux and Corey Seager hurting his back. Wow. You know, you just are like, gosh, dang it. So why'd you put Mookie there, though? He's your best option. But, yeah, not fun. Not fun at all.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
Eastside Liquor has every alcohol you need as we get close to summer. Green River Bourbon and Rye is flying off the shelves right now. Come check out the new Crystal Ridge Moonshine and Vodka, made right here in Hot Springs. Eastside Liquor, 9390 Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith. Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Hey, guys, doing good.
Good. So it's going to be a very well could be an all-SEC affair in the championship series once again. I don't see any way that it's not going to be. Tennessee right now looks, if they were going to lose, they were going to lose in Friday's game to Florida State on that check swing. Didn't happen. A&M in Kentucky, I think, is going to be what you're looking at in the finals on their side. So it's kind of the way a lot of SEC baseball fans thought this thing would work out.
It's sitting there right for Tony Vitello to take. He's just got to finish it.
What does that do if they win a championship there? I don't think he leaves Tennessee for Texas or anywhere else for that matter. But, you know what I mean? LSU didn't really do much in baseball until Skip Bertman got there, and then they turned into the beasts right of college baseball. I mean, there's some vibes of what's going on there in Knoxville that feels the same way.
He's already arguably the best talent evaluator / recruiter because – the stars develop, but the guys that weren't the big-name players in recruiting also develop. It's amazing his touch there. And if he's now selling a national championship, and I believe their class, now again, who gets campus, we all know that's iffy, but I think it's ranked number one or number two by Perfect Game. But if he's now selling a natty, and they're going to have to replace basically their entire lineup. They're all gone. God knows what he'll do in the portal. Now, I don't think he can be real active right now because he's trying to win some ball games, but no telling what he'll unleash if he's got a national championship to sell.
Did you see what, and I don't know what collective is doing this with Tennessee, but people love to make a big deal about the Jello Shot Challenge, and it's $5 for a Jello Shot. I saw where there's a collective at Tennessee that is charging $10 for the shot, $5 going to the bar, $5 going to the NIL collective. And I would just imagine that there's a lot of Tennessee fans that don't mind paying double for a Jello shot.
That is the Spires group. And they call it the Volunteer something, but their collective is the Spires group, and it's considered one of the biggest, whatever that's supposed to mean. And they're the ones that supposedly are paying Nico Iamaleava $8 million. So they're up to something. They're always up to something, it seems like.
Bill, you got Florida State, North Carolina right now, then Kentucky and Florida later on this afternoon. Who wins these two games?
I like Florida State, and I think I like Kentucky. But Florida's kind of got that Ole Miss thing going from 2 years ago. Now, I know they're a much bigger brand and program than Ole Miss, but they're pesky right now. Now, Cags, it looks like Cags has thrown his last pitch. Y'all was probably checking that out last night, right?
Yeah, he was rubbing his elbow.
But his game is hitting the ball, and he hit a home run after that. So, obviously, that's not an issue. But I probably like Kentucky slightly. And Florida State.
Caglione's such a great hitter. I don't think he needs two arms to swing a bat and hit a home run. He could probably do it with one. He could do it with one. Brought this up yesterday. We'll get into college football here. Les Miles has now sued LSU. But I thought LSU vacates these 37 wins, but I don't think they had a choice. Like, they were forced to by the NCAA, and I don't know, maybe thought suing the NCAA was just a little bit overdone these days. But that also goes, I was looking at this, like Miles' winning percentage now is maybe one percentage point ahead of Mike Leach. You'd be like, okay, well, I think Leach, even though he doesn't have the 60% winning percentage, like, can't there be a category like you have in the NFL for guys who invented something that caught fire and influential coaches? It just seems to me that Leach kind of belongs in there.
Man, I like him because he worked on my channel, so I'm very biased, but I think he's brilliant. Brilliant. One of the brilliant offensive minds of this era. And I think the fans of LSU ought to sue Les Miles for not having an offensive game plan in the 2011 National Championship game. That's the sorriest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I knew I'd get something good bringing Miles up about that. And it's also like, okay, well, he could also sue himself for taking the Kansas job and thinking that that might work there.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I remember. You remember the post game, Bobby Hebert, famous quarterback. He's part of the media, and he's grilling Les Miles about what the heck that offensive game plan was. It was so fun.
Now he came from Oklahoma State, right? He was there before Gundy got there, but did he not have? I thought that was supposed to be part of his MO, but it just seemed. I'm with you though. That was a hard game to watch. It was like a 9-6 type of game.
Well, that was the first game they played, and they won that one. But yeah, nobody got anything done in the second game. They looked like they were scared of Alabama's defense. They didn't want to do anything, but. Yeah, he did a good job at Oklahoma State. He really did. Got the LSU job out of it. Won the craziest year we've had in modern history, if not ever, 07. They won the national championship with two losses. Lost late to Arkansas and Kentucky and still won the national championship. And that 2011 team was an epic talent team. I mean, a ridiculously gifted team. But nonetheless, he's not real popular over there. I can tell you that. I can promise you that.
You got this early matchup. I've already heard it talked about on a couple national media outlets. But Georgia going to Austin to play Texas, I believe, week two of the college football season. Is that the best game that's in the first couple weeks?
I think that game's later. That Clemson Georgia game's early. Yeah, but your point is Georgia's got to play Clemson. They've got Alabama on the road, they've got Ole Miss on the road, and they got Texas on the road. And couple this with the stat, they haven't lost a regular season game since 2020, the Florida game. That's probably not going to last with that. And they may be the best team in the country. I think they are, but there's no way you're going to run that schedule, I don't think.
Which Texas school wins more games this year, A&M or Texas?
It's a better question than I would have perhaps entertained a year ago, but Texas is still a better team. And I think A&M is going to be very good. And I don't know if I want to call them underrated because we know what the Aggies are capable of if they're well coached. But I think you have to go with Texas, right?
Is there anywhere that you think Texas is vulnerable coming into this season, a position group that might stand out, and where do you think they're strongest?
Not really. Now, I'm not saying they're loaded at every position, but I don't see a issue that for example, Ohio State. That offensive line has not been what it needs to be. And I don't think going into this year with all the talent they have, and they're loaded, I still think that's a question mark. I don't know if I have maybe replenishing those receivers, but they've recruited so well and they've portaled so well. I just don't think that's an issue.
Yeah, they're D linemen. I know they had that one go, was it to Seattle late? I thought he was probably the best defensive player, one of the best in the draft. So, but they, like you said, they got guys in waiting.
I don't think D line will be a problem. They had the best tackle, other than Michigan, they had the best tackle duo, D tackle duo in the country. Up the middle, the old strength up the middle in sports. They had all of that last year. I can't really pick one out. I mean, if yours goes down, Arch Manning's waiting, and he's been marinating for a little while now, so he's probably ready. I don't think that's an issue.
What about if Beck goes down to Georgia? I remember they got we were even bringing him up, Rashada.
Jaden Rashada.
Is he expected to back up, or does he have to fight for that position?
Their backup at the moment is a kid that, remember, they were beating Florida State so bad that They didn't even play Carson Beck in the second half of their bowl game. And that's the young man who right now would be number two. If Rashada comes in, remember, he's got to learn everything. He wasn't there in the spring. So he's got to learn everything. And he could eventually be the number two. Heck, he might be competing for the number one after Beck's gone. But right now, it'd be the kid that they played in the bowl game who's a sophomore.
Last year during the season, Bill, you were one of the first kind of to talk about Washington and how good they were going to be. I think at TCU the year before, Washington last year making the move. Who's a team that's kind of under the radar right now that you could see that ends up being? I guess now you just got to be in the playoff 12.
I don't know if I've got one in that category. Washington wasn't really under the radar for me. I didn't necessarily say they'd be in the championship game, but I knew they would be a big threat. That part did not surprise me. I don't think Ole Miss is a surprise because it's the best Ole Miss roster I've seen in my lifetime. That's not going to be a surprise. I think a surprise would be if they let us down, which it's hard to live up to that kind of hype. That one will be interesting. I don't know if I see another TCU looming at the moment, kind of the perfect storm. I just don't know if I see one.
Would Penn State be a surprise, or are they've just kind of been on the cusp lately?
No, they wouldn't be a surprise. Yeah. They're top 10.
Yeah.
They're top 10 good. They just can't beat Ohio State and Michigan, and that's where it's starting to get a little chippy up there. Now, they should beat Michigan this year. Michigan is going to have to completely redo their offense. They're going to be stout again on defense, but their offense is going to be shaky. And Penn State has no business losing that game. You know what, guys? Maybe they don't play. But they need to win those two marquee games for sure.
Bill, you saw this. I don't know if you saw it, Matt. This is a kind of a crazy story that a bunch of Colorado Buffalo players decided to leave the program, enter the transfer portal because Deion Sanders made a Lil Wayne concert mandatory. That was at their spring game because Shador was going to get up on stage and perform his single. And it was mandatory for the players to be there. And it's like they start to figure out. I mean, I wonder how long it takes before you figure out that this whole thing, this whole Colorado thing, is a spotlight for Shador Sanders. That's how it comes across.
It's 8U Little League Daddy Ball. Right? My kid's going to pitch. He's going to play shortstop. He's going to hit first. Now, Shador Sanders is a heck of a prospect. So I'm not trying to make it sound like they're playing a guy just because it's daddy, but he's really not any good. That kid's probably a first-round draft pick. But the whole premise of daddy ball is true. If any of you have had kids and gone through that, every league and every city in America experiences daddy ball, and that's what that is.
Now, I was coached by my pops at a younger age, and always said, you know, I have to be harder on you than everybody else out there. But and it doesn't look like Deion's doing that. Deion needs to be you have to set the example when that's the type of relationship, because everybody's looking at that and being the quarterback, and jealousy starts to happen.
No doubt about it. Now, it just so happened you were good, though. So even if it was daddy ball, it worked out well.
What ends up happening in those situations is that it isn't necessarily the kid's fault, but he becomes a villain in a lot of people's eyes. You just people start rooting against you. And I wasn't convinced that the Deion Sanders thing would work at Colorado. I'm still not convinced it will. And all of this, it just kind of echoes to me that there's no way that this will work. And I almost, like, I don't feel bad for Shador because he's grown up privileged and he's incredibly talented. He's going to have a great career, but it's not necessarily his fault that people are going to be rooting against him.
He's making a couple of million a year in name, image, likeness money. He's driving a Bentley or something. He's doing fine.
Yeah, that's going to be tough for people to.
Does him and Travis Hunter make it through the entire season? That's what's going to be. You know, you have a couple losses, something happens, they start packing it up. You know, how many games do you really get out of those two guys?
So I just wonder how many linemen on that rebuilt offensive line decided to leave because they had to go to this concert.
Well, and Travis Hunter, as spectacular as he is, no denial, is very slight. He may be 170 pounds, and you worry about that. And are you going to play him at corner every down and receiver? That's rough.
You're listening to the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast. Check out the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast at hitthatline.com.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.